I don't think we're necessarily supposed to like the story of the Good Samaritan. The parable has become so familiar and so iconic. It's kind of like a family member who you see once a year during the holidays and who you've seen every year or two since you were a kid. And they look the same and they speak in the same intonations, but really they have a whole interior life that you know nothing about. The context is that Jesus has just told his listeners about the two most important laws: to love God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and to love your neighbor as yourself. The lawyer who prompted the parable in the story had some further questions about these rules, as lawyers tend to do. And scholars of Luke's gospel really don't, they tend not to like the lawyer because he was testing Jesus. I think that some of these scholars might have been victims of some anti-lawyer propaganda. I really like the lawyer because he's asking a question that a lot of us, I hope most of us have asked at least once in our life, which is, what do I have to do to inherit eternal life? What do I have to do to get into heaven? If you've never asked this question before, you can find me at Coffee and Chaos later because I have some questions for you. But the lawyer is also asking Jesus something else really pressing, something else that I think that many of us can inhabit. He's saying in essence, I know that the law says that I have to love my neighbor, but is there anyone who I don't have to love? Where can I draw the line? There are lines, aren't there? I mean, we've all seen what it's like out there. At the time that Jesus told this story, the hatred between Samaritans and Jews was really at a boiling point. The two groups disagreed about just everything that mattered, and the term Good Samaritan, which, by the way, doesn't appear in the story at all, but the term Good Samaritan itself was an oxymoron because for Jews, there would have been no such thing. So, to put it delicately, the two groups hated each other's guts. And there are certain thought exercises that we might do in the 21st century to try to recover the original scandal of this parable. So at the risk of offending you, let's try one. Imagine that it's a Monday morning and you're walking down the street in Raleigh and you're wearing your work clothes and you're already a few minutes late for your first meeting of the day, and you see someone lying in the gutter on your side of the street. What do you do? You are a Ukrainian, and you realize that the person in the gutter is Vladimir Putin. Okay, let's rewind and try a different one. You are a pro-choice donor to Planned Parenthood. You're a woman, and you see that the person in the ditch is a man, and you recognize him from someone who was just protesting in front of the Raleigh State House, who's a pro-life campaigner, and you saw what his sign said, and it cut you to the core. That's the guy that you see in the ditch. So you get the picture. The parable isn't just trying to teach us how to be a good person. When we stop there, it kind of domesticates the whole thing. In telling this parable, Jesus is asking his followers to do something that is almost impossible. And in the parable itself, we are left to guess the reasons why the Levite and the priest cross over to the other side. It doesn't say why. Martin Luther King Jr. preached on this same parable in the year 1968. And in that sermon, he said that he thinks it's possible that the priest and the Levite were afraid, and that they had seen the man and asked themselves the question, if I stop to help this man, what will happen to me? But the Samaritan saw the man and reversed that question and said to himself, if I don't stop to help this person, what will happen to them? Maybe if the priest and the Levite had come near the dying man, they might have to face truths about themselves that they would probably rather not like to admit. And what the Samaritan did for the half-dead man was extravagant. We get lots of details about everything that he did. He loved his neighbor. And love as we know it, I wish there were more words for it, but there aren't. Love is a dramatic word. And the actions that express love realistically are so much more often ordinary than they are extravagant, like what the Good Samaritan did. And the actions that express love, these ordinary actions, most likely will go unnoticed in our life, or they'll be quiet. They'll be noticed by nobody but God. There are plenty of ordinary moments in our lives where we can decide if we'll engage with someone else in their suffering or discomfort. And I think our days are built of these ordinary moments where we come to these decision-making intersections where we can either step closer to someone or step away. We can decide, we usually decide to cross the proverbial street, because in the pursuit of the good life, it may feel necessary to draw lines between us and those who pose inconvenient demands on our time or money. We distance ourselves from those whose neediness pose a risk to our own well-being, or to our own perceived well-being. But Jesus' life, death, and resurrection show us that love is rooted in action. It's not enough to just think good thoughts or wish good things for our neighbors. As my friend Stephanie, who's a priest over in Durham, says that with some neighbors, even thinking good thoughts about them is a lot to ask. Loving our neighbor always involves something that's going to be inconvenient at best. And there's nobody we don't have to love. That's why we probably shouldn't like this parable. It's a story that's meant for us to take an honest inventory of our own limitations. Jesus tells the lawyer to go and do this almost impossible thing. Then you will live. In essence, reverse the question in your hearts. Choose to draw close to those who are suffering and act out mercy. Don't just think it. At the end of the parable, the lawyer reluctantly agrees with Jesus that the neighbor is the one who showed him mercy. And you can see in the story that the lawyer can't even bring himself to say the word Samaritan. He just says, the one who showed him mercy. And the story is left open-ended. We never know, and we won't know, if that character was able to go and do that thing that Jesus told him to do. Our stories are left open-ended, too. I wonder, can you and I go out from here and consistently do this almost impossible thing in the world? It would be a miracle. But I believe in miracles. And if we consistently ask, I think that the Spirit will be there to show us all the way.